Greetings. You are listening to the Northeast Ohio AFSC Weekly Audio Podcast. I'm Greg Coleridge. It is Friday, June 26th. As always, we hope this podcast informs you about issues you feel are important but not hearing elsewhere, updates you about past and upcoming AFSC plans and activities, and inspires you to take action. It is, after all, grassroots social movements made up of well-informed, prepared, and motivated people that create real change. We begin with summarizing our activities from this past week, and that included this past Monday a monthly call of the Move to Amend Ohio Outreach Committee, where we discussed and updated one another about where plans stand in reaching out to communities, both geographic and constituency, to try to widen and deepen the Move to Amend movement here in Ohio. On Tuesday was a gathering, what was called Pizza, Pop, and Petitions in South Euclid to assist the South Euclid Move to Amend group in their quest to come up with roughly 753 in particular valid signatures they need to get their initiative on the ballot this November in South Euclid. A number of people attended, went out in the community, and I can just speak from my experience, no one I ran into going door-to-door, and this was a couple of hours going door-to-door, was against it. Not everyone signed because some people said, you know, this is a pretty complicated issue. What exactly is corporate personhood? I mean, they understand kind of money corrupting the system, but it's still sort of hard for a lot of people to understand and comprehend how money can be defined as free speech. You know, wait a second, how can money be defined as speech? Only people can speak, right? How does money speak? Money is property, right? So a lot of this reason for why people didn't sign was simply because people just couldn't understand these illogical notions that corporations, which are artificial legal fictions, can be defined as human persons in a variety of different ways, as the Supreme Court has agreed over the years, and that money, which is nothing more than property like land and other forms of property, can be defined as free speech. It's just an alien concept, and it is an alien concept. But nevertheless, many people did sign, very enthusiastic people who, you know, just get it at a guttural level, and it doesn't take much for people to understand that these notions are bizarre, and that by anointing corporations with all of these never-intended rights, and that money is defined as speech, just makes no sense, and that by doing so, then those who have the most money have the most speech. Just they can't quite comprehend how this promotes justice and peace, which it doesn't. So had a lot of success getting signatures, as did others, and the South Euclid Group is close to being halfway of what they need get their initiative on the ballot. Of course, Wednesday there was a number of people from Northeast Ohio, including myself and others connected to AFSC, that headed to Philadelphia for the U.S. Social Forum. And we're going to talk about what that is momentarily. And the U.S. Social Forum goes, it started yesterday on Thursday, will be going today, Saturday, and ends Sunday at about early afternoon. So those were the activities for this past week. Coming up next week, rather a light week, actually. There's just meetings that we're having with a number of different constituency groups in Akron area Monday evening. I and some others will be meeting with the Bhutanese community and Tuesday with the Irish community. And in both cases, the goal is to get both of those constituencies to have a voice here in the Akron area by getting a program on our upcoming Radio Free Akron low power FM radio station. So that's what's going on this next week. We turn now to some reflections from the U.S. Social Forum of individuals who are here, and I'm speaking to you from Philadelphia this week, who are participating, did participate last week and are participating, or yesterday anyway, and are participating today through Sunday. So momentarily, you'll hear some voices of some individuals who we brought to the U.S. Social Forum. We are here at the U.S. Social Forum in Philadelphia. For those who are unfamiliar with what the U.S. Social Forum is, basically it is a convergence. This comes from the organizers of this, who say that it is a convergence driven by the understanding that people's movements are what create social change. The Social Forum is an opportunity for regional and issue-specific social justice projects to work toward broader unity. Our vision is to map out action plans for a cohesive movement to create a better world we all know is possible. We are committed to reaching far and wide to lift up all community voices so they can be heard and know they are not alone. Through learning together, we will tear down divisions and put into practice the idea that your fight is my fight. The Philadelphia Social Forum is the third one that has occurred over the last decade. Back in 2007, the first U.S. forum, anyway, took place in Atlanta, Georgia. Then in 2010, the second in Detroit. This year's forum is a little different than the previous two in that it is being called polycentric, meaning it is central in multiple places at the same time. Here in Philadelphia, over this weekend, there are thousands of people who will be coming together to take part in workshops in what are called people's movement assemblies that are more participatory, roll-up-your-sleeve action plans. Similar activities will be taking place simultaneously in San Jose, California, Jackson, Mississippi, and also somewhere, I think, in Mexico City, Mexico. So this is a different organized gathering taking place over this weekend in multiple places, but all trying to achieve the same purpose, to build a social movement. So AFSC, along with the Interreligious Task Force and Organize Ohio, has sponsored three vans to come to Philadelphia to take part, and not just be passive observants, but active participants. So what we want to do is just interview a couple of people who have come down on the vans to get their reflections on what's gone on so far and what they hope will come up here over the next couple of days between now and the early afternoon on Sunday. So I want to interview a couple of individuals. I'm going to begin with William Marshall from Cleveland. So thanks, William.
Thank you, Greg.
So just sort of briefly say, you know, who you are and why you decided to come down here.
My name is William Clarence Marshall. I am from Cleveland. Well, I live in Cleveland, and I am the secretary of the Carl Stokes Brigade. The Carl Stokes Brigade is a grassroots, local grassroots group that actually honors the first African-American mayor of a major big city. And I'm down here. Actually, I was in Detroit, and now, of course, I'm here, in much to my surprise, in Philadelphia, looking for solutions, some answers, and definite strategies that work and, you know, move the whole thing forward.
And briefly, what have you had an opportunity to participate in so far? Today is Friday, and the Social Forum began yesterday late morning or so. What have you taken in so far?
Oh, I've actually, on Thursday, I've taken in three sessions. The first one was 15 years after Columbine, why the criminalization of America's youth is a racial justice tragedy. I found that fascinating and at the same time a bit depressing. Then I moved over to an afternoon session called A Black Liberation Manifesto for the 21st Century, the Centrality of Youth, Women, and Revolutionary Praxis. And I found that it was heady. It was exciting. It was intellectual. And I really felt like there was a movement. A lot of people targeted some of the things that worked and some of the things that didn't work. And there was a lot of admitting that we need it needs to be more youth engendered. And that was really exciting, and some of the failures, and that they're hoping that we will not go that way again, and that we will include more youth and actually more leadership, a more active leadership role, and sort of get out of the way, moderate, guide. Some of the institutional activist knowledge would be contributed, but basically kind of get out of the way. So I was really hopeful and excited about that.
Just before moving on to the next thing, I just wanted to kind of tweak that out a bit. You know, social movements of the past are important to learn about, not simply because of some intellectual exercise, but to learn from, to use as stepping stones to make better what we're engaged in today. Not that these things are completely replicable, because things are different, but in having gone through that, what would you say were, you know, the one or two greatest successes and one or two things that were the most important things to learn from, to improve upon this time around?
I think that all ideas have, they have purpose, they have energy, and that people realize that they have to take their, their so-called egos out of the game. And I think people are conscious of labels that we put on each other, whether we're young, whether we're old. I could see that people still struggling with that, but people trying to get beyond the labeling so that they could really get to the real nuts and bolts, what really works. No matter what my preconceived my own ego is, I think a lot of people said, let's get the egos out of the way, because we've really got problems. And the three people that I saw that were kind of just guiding this in this Black Liberation Manifesto for the 21st century were really conscious of that. They really took themselves out of it and said, okay, you know, we've been here, we've been down this road, and we really want to hear some fresh ideas. And at the same time, when we need to guide you, that everything old is new again. To me, that was it. People were like, aha, so you guys have done this. And I said, well, yeah. But we still want your creative energy, your input. I just thought it was refreshing that 50 people could just really calm down and listen. And felt like they felt activated and part of something bigger, better, exciting. And I really thought people walked away with, there's a solution, there's hope here. And I'm going to connect with the other people. I'm going to connect, reconnect, and, you know, new connections. I think there was a lot of respect in the room.
Great. All right, and your third workshop or gathering that you took part in, what was that?
There was just working with youth, peace, and social justice, but it became more about labor. Labor and employment, or, you know, underemployment with so-called Black and brown, you know, African American and Latinos in Chicago. They're basically their working status, that these employment agencies are pitting one group against the other, and, you know, realizing that you've got immigrant populations, and of course you have populations that are Latino and African American pushing up against each other and saying, well, we need to see what this really is, call it what it really is, and work together. But you've got the new and the old, and some people realizing that, well, I've been here just as long as you've been here, and I'm a citizen just like you, and even if we're not citizens, that we need to work together. That the so-called enemy, or the boulder in front of us, is going to roll over us unless we lift together, and, you know,
right.
find a creative solution. And I found people were more amenable to the idea that we really need to work together instead of, you know, working apart.
Mm-hmm. Never an easy task, though. That was something certainly that came out yesterday in the major initial plenary session. A common theme was, look, we've got a lot of differences. We come from different places. We work on different issues. We have different tactics to a certain extent, but we can certainly, if nothing else, respect one another and figure out, must absolutely, it's not even optional at this point, we have to figure out how to come together and work together. At least some of what we do overlap, because we individually are just simply being crushed by the powers to be and simply can't go it alone, no matter how big or powerful or potent we think we are individually as constituents, as organizations, as siloized issues. So that overarching or undergirding theme of unity is just something that certainly is weaving its way through the entire gathering. So what do you hope to kind of get out of this through between now and the end of Sunday? What do you think?
I'm looking forward to your session, even though it's really near the end, so I'm fascinated about that. I'm fascinated to make people I've never met before, you know, just new ideas, new creativity, but I'm hoping to leave with people say, aha, I've got something that you might want to try, and it's worked for, you know, our organizations, and perhaps it can work for yours, that there are more commonalities. You know, everybody's coming and looking for something. They're all on these shores. You know, I kept on thinking, you know, Emma Lazarus, send me the homeless tempest tossed to thee. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. I don't think anybody was, you never heard anybody trashing, you know, the country we live in. Just, we've got to move the whole human thing forward. There's got to be more humanity, fair play. There's got to be more justice than injustice. It's, everybody recognizes that. And I do think that they are, the people are willing to want to change the whole American thing. It's got to change. I hear everybody saying that, and they're excited. There's energy. It's just, it's that thing. How do we focus it so it will work for the most people? The bang for the buck.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, no, that's very, very insightful and very inspiring, because you're absolutely right. There is certainly greater awareness, much more than ever before, that things just are not working as we are told it's supposed to be under the current construct. Now, what the alternative is, that's yet to be quite agreed to or even conceived of, maybe. But, you know, here again, when we come together and contribute our little piece of it, that contributes hopefully to some larger mosaic that once you get it all out there, all right, now it will reveal itself quite how it fits together, both in terms of what it is we desire and then what are the steps required to get there. So it's not something any of us can do individually, and we'll see how it plays out. But just as an FYI, William had mentioned something coming up at the end of this Sunday from 9 a.m. I know it's fairly early to 1 p.m. is going to be a People's Movement Assembly that AFSC, both nationally and our office in Northeast Ohio, moved to amend. Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, a few other organizations are co-facilitating, enabling, called The People Versus the Corporations, Whose Constitution Is It?, where we're going to do some of the visioning about, hey, not just what we've got now, but how we can figure out ways that the Constitution can be something that is more reflective of the needs and the aspirations, and particularly reflecting not just sort of political rights, but economic and social and cultural and so many other rights that are necessary, as well as expanding political rights, because those are being narrowed as we speak almost by the day. So what can we do to figure out ways not just to kind of conceive of, but again, work toward that and figure out an action plan that we can start implementing between now and the years ahead. For those who are not able to make it to Philadelphia then or any time, there are several parts of the social forum that are being live streamed, and I believe that PMA is included. For information on that in particular, go to the Move to Amend website. That's movetoamend.org. And I'm not exactly sure where on there, but I believe there is information about what's taking place both in Philadelphia and San Jose. And some of the larger sessions in particular are being live streamed. So check those out. But this one in particular that I'll be participating in and others with the other organizations, including the program on corporations, law, and democracy that we've been a part of for many a year, go to movetoamend.org, movetoamend.org. Well, joining me now is Genevieve Mitchell, also from Cleveland, who has come down with us from Northeast Ohio to the Social Forum. Welcome, Genevieve.
Oh, thank you, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Just wanted to get your reflections. We've heard from William about what he has participated in so far, and what have you so far had a chance to attend here over the last day?
I attended three workshops yesterday, actually. One on education, the kind of reforms that need to be implemented by parents and the community because they are doing the cradle to prison pipeline. And
I know in particular that subject is of interest to you because of your background. Why don't you share a little bit what your educational professional background is?
Yes, I was previously the duly elected vice president of the Cleveland Board of Education, and we were summarily politically deposed because of a thrust to move toward mayoral control. And that was as a result of the board wanting to move away from the desegregated system under the federal government to a unitary system of local parental control, neighborhood schools, and community control of the schools, which we still do not have in Cleveland because we're still under mayoral control.
Right. So anyway, I didn't want to interrupt, but just thought listeners would appreciate that context.
Thank you.
So the workshop itself, that was one.
The workshop was very interesting, I'll say. We had two presenters. I don't have the name of the professor from Atlanta with me, and the gentleman yesterday.
That's all right.
Yeah, but the focus was the cradle to prison pipeline, which is problematic. The Children's Defense Fund identified that. Marion Wright Edelman identified that years ago. She's been railing on that. They talked about the implications of that pipeline and that the criminalization of youth in the schools now. There are police, there are metal detectors in these schools. They've been institutionalized in many schools, and it's a result of the Columbine fanaticism after that horrible incident over in Columbine, Colorado, where the mass killing in the school. So they use that as a segue to impose all kinds of restrictive, I would say, not just politically restrictive, but criminally restrictive acts on the parents of these children. And so in schools throughout the United States, there are provisions and policies that, where police have to be stationed in the schools, where there are they're called student helpers. But they're not. Their real function is to serve as police. And any act of aggression on the part of our children, which usually heretofore has been construed as, just you know, children being children, is now looked upon as criminal behavior. And particularly in urban schools where there are Hispanic and black children, you know, those minorities and poor whites are subject to being labeled. And early on, she talked about a five-year-old, the five-year-old years ago, who was handcuffed because she threw a tantrum in kindergarten. She wanted to continue playing with some of the toys that they had, and they summarily called the police and had her, you know, thrown to the ground, and she was handcuffed and taken away in a squad car, which was extremely traumatic. She's 15 now, so we can only hope that she's recovered from that. And there was a six-year-old in a similar situation that they spoke of, who, you know, was handcuffed, and she was charged with two felonies, and she has two misdemeanors, one felony and two misdemeanors.
Wow. And what about the other two events, workshops?
The other two workshops were fantastic. One on black liberation, which was...
Hey, William also participated.
Yes, he did. And I thought that was really fantastic because they are forming a serious think tank of black intellectuals and others who are coming together for the express purpose of working in behalf of the black communities across this country, you know, because of the commiserate situation that's going on with the criminalization and prison industrial complex, the education system, the military industrial complex, you know, housing, just on and on and on.
So, yeah, that's sorely needed in the spirit of Dr. Akbar.
Yes, absolutely. And what they're trying to do is sort of identify and coalesce all these different fractured movements and put them, you know, bring them together, unify them so that we can proceed with a game plan. And it was very interesting, the three professors that were speaking yesterday.
Great.
Yes. I don't have all my notes in
the
early.
Giving listeners highlights. Mm-hmm. So what do you hope to get out of this? What are you hoping will be the takeaway for you that you can return with to Cleveland to do something with?
Well, I came because I've heard such wonderful things about the U.S. Social Policy Forum. The last workshop yesterday was also wonderful because it talked about the temp agencies and how they're prostituting workers and, you know, denigrating labor, which is, you know, just unbelievable, some of the things that are going on. And these temp agencies are being put together. And I don't mean to digress because I did get your question, but I'm leaving.
Which is a big problem in Cleveland, certainly. Minuteman Agency is a huge entity that hires minimum wage workers and are able to distort public policy, and they have been some of the owners, big campaign, political campaign contributors or investors as well.
My question was, where is the United States Department of Labor? Where are the labor unions, you know, watching this, viewing this, and knowing that they're basically bringing back slave labor on the open labor market, not just in terms of the prison labor market, but the open labor market now, because they want to pay people far less than minimum wage. They have no pensions. They have no benefits, no sick days. They have they work at will. So some days they said, the gentlemen were from Chicago, actually, where they said it's just exploding. You know, temp agencies used to be kind of like an alternative in case you needed extra help. Now it's becoming normative labor in the labor market. So, but the takeaway from all of this that, you know, I hope to get is just a renewed sense of what kinds of defense mechanisms are being mounted out there against all of these egregious actions that are being done to people across the country and all the different levels of life activity. And I'm very hopeful from what I saw yesterday. Because I know that there are very, very brilliant people who are looking at this in, you know, specifics and its totality, and they're coming up with a game plan in terms of how we need to proceed with regard to legislative and public policy, with regard to mobilizing individuals on the ground, making sure people are registered to vote, making sure that they're educated about voting, and even looking at targeting some of the political offices that people, the incumbents, currently hold, and supplanting individuals who are more concerned about people and their the quality of their lives and the quality of what this country, the creed of what this country should really live up to, as opposed to profit. Because most of what we're seeing, the greed, the stupidity, the egregious acts are being generated. They're emanating from people who are concerned solely about profit and corporatized profit. And I know that's one of your big bailiwicks is ending corporate personhood through the MoveOn.org organization.
MoveOn.org.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, I mean, certainly what it is you're hoping to leap from this convergence is exactly what so many others are hoping to, that, yeah, we need to figure out ways to resist that transcends just these 4 days and immediately when we go back, but that is sustainable, that is long-term.
To resist, to organize, to be able to identify a network with which to organize and to come up with a strategic game plan that's going to identify these problems and help to solve them. I mean, we need solutions right now.
That's right. So it's not just simply saying no to something, but what is it that we're going to try to come together to say yes around in developing a vision and then an actionable plan to try to implement that vision? Because as one of the people said yesterday in the plenary session to sort of kick this whole thing off is, you know, underneath all of this, the one main value that has to imbue everything we do is a commitment to that of love. And that we are, the policies going on right now, political and economic, are anything but loving. They are oppressive, they are hateful, they are spiteful, they are ignorant of the needs and the wills of people, and that's really got to, I mean, there's a place for anger, there's a place for being mad, but there is a place for definitely undergirding what we do by having love toward one another. And that's what we hope all of these policies
are. It's missing. It's missing. You're absolutely right, Greg. There's no humanity. There's no love. There's no humanity in any of these, in starving children, in miseducating or not educating our children, in creating a prison industrial complex where that becomes normative for people to leave dysfunctional public high schools. And if they get that far, and to go right into, segue into either a juvenile justice system or the prisons, and to work there as slaves. I mean, this is unconscionable. This is not the direction that the United States of America should go. We need a serious public policy paradigm shift, and it's got to come from the ground up. I'm hoping that I'll be able to, my takeaway is to be able to go back to my community and to inform the various groups and organizations and individuals in my neighborhood that I, you know, work with, that there is another view of things, and it's mounting, and it's going to translate into political power, and it's going to translate into a political policy paradigm shift, which is exactly what our communities and our nation needs.
Right, and even maybe more fundamental, it's going to translate into a movement, a social movement that has a political and economic and social wings of. So, well, on that, and just to underline this notion of love, you know, that is part of one of the slogans of AFSC, to see what love can do, to see what love can do. And that's what we're certainly all about here, and wanted to thank Genevieve for, and just as an FYI, Genevieve is also on our committee, on our board of Northeast Ohio AFSC. So thanks so much, Genevieve.
You are so welcome, Greg. Thank you for having me.
Well, joining us now is Derek DeSell, who is an activist in the Cleveland area and who also came down to Philadelphia from Cleveland on the Vans. Thanks for joining us, Derek.
Thanks for asking me to join us.
Well, why did you want to come to Philadelphia, the Social Forum?
A number of reasons. You know, for one, I had never been to a gathering kind of this large, and the spirit of the Social Forum has always been interesting to me. So I found out about it looking back. I believe Chomsky was talking about it, that it really formed an opposition to the World Economic Forum, which was anti-democratic, which is really this kind of convergence, this cabal of global capitalists and your establishment to essentially create policy for the world and subjugate the world. So the Social Forum globally developed as an opposition to that, often was in the global south, was in South America, places like Bolivia, Peru, you know, and then the U.S. developed one as well, and I thought it was more recently, but it was 07. So I was interested to see just the energy that would be here, what kind of organizing was going around, how it would apply to Cleveland. And then, you know, trying to see how I just got out of a PMA, stepped out of a PMA. We were talking about poverty.
PMA is what?
People's Movement Assembly. So there's a takeaway. People's Movement Assembly is where you kind of, you probe the problem, and then you strategize around it. In a sense, I mean, that, you know, there's a process to getting there, but you probe the issue, you let everyone talk about what the issue is on an intellectual and in a kind of a visceral level, and then you talk about organizing strategies. But the PMA was talking about poverty, and kind of one of my takeaways from my own poverty, which is relative, I know, it's not absolute, it's relative, but is that travel is a big thing. If you're poor, you don't even consider the opportunity to travel, because there's a lot of, this was an opportunity, almost free travel. And one beautiful thing about traveling, especially to a city like Philly, is that you can see that another world is possible, but it also brings up your own world. We talked about how poverty here in Philly is just so extreme, especially compared to Cleveland. You come right in and you see it immediately. You know, we walked around this place called the Badlands, where it was just trash everywhere, you know, heroin addicts selling laptops, right? You know, middle of the day, we talked about how cops would just, my friend of mine, Roger, talked about how cops would just yell, you know, would just yell cocaine at you, you know, in the middle of the night. So you get to see the extremes of the world, and travel is something that you can really use to, you know, contextualize your own fight in your own city. Something that I want to do more of, and I, you know, didn't have an opportunity to before.
Yeah, what are you involved in back in Cleveland? What sort of campaigns, groups, and the like?
A few things. Move to Amend would be one. Starting up, looking to get a ballot initiative in Cleveland. You know, declaring that corporations are not people, money is not speech. It's part of a, you know, kind of global, more national pressure movement. And then also the New Abolitionist Association. Mission is to combat the cradle to prison pipeline through constructive programs, youth leadership development, and nonviolent direct action. Kind of looking at it through, you know, taking some of the titans on of nonviolent struggle. Gandhi, Lawson is really a mentor to many of us. We go to Nashville frequently, and then, you know, we have been working on kind of police brutality issues. When Tamir Rice came up, we looked at it through the lens of kind of how young people of color are looked at by police forces, not only police forces, but also the school system. So how, you know, they're looked at as older, they're instantly criminalized just for being who they are. And that also applies to the kind of campaigns we wanted to look at. And one of the workshops I hit yesterday was talking about, the ACLU put it on, was talking about zero tolerance policies and criminalization in schools in general. So that's where we really wanted to focus ourselves. We kind of moved to some other things now, but that's where the fight would be going forward. So looking to see here is what that means.
Yeah. What else that you took in yesterday made an impression on you, either workshop or any of the speakers at the kickoff plenary?
Yeah.
Anything in particular?
The speakers
stood out.
I'm a big rhetorical guy, and I'm kind of like, I enjoy speech writing. I enjoy speaking. I'm almost like a speech nerd, you know. But a number of kind of phrases that came up there, I could pull them out right now, but stuff that I could take and use to kind of contextualize things for people. But we did a workshop on kind of pedagogy, and they didn't call it pedagogy the press. They kind of called it, it was the Goddard College, which is a college in Vermont. And they talked about kind of using teaching in a more democratic way. And it really thought me to think more about what I've been doing, kind of trying to develop a theater piece on the Confederate flag and white supremacy, and how do you cleanse yourself of that, and how do you overcome that and recognize your own privilege and your own kind of supremacy, but using teaching and pedagogy in a way that's both educational and also kind of cutting at power at the same time. Because we often separate, you know, let's do this film showing, or let's do this workshop, and then let's do this action. But they can be marinated, and it's not easy. But we have to think about them using them in the same way. And that was something I really kind of crystallized yesterday.
Yeah. What's coming up? What are you looking forward to taking part in? between now and when we get out of here on Sunday?
Number of performances coming up. There's a march. There's a, I believe it's tomorrow, pretty much all day poetry performances, kind of street performance. What we talked about was hopefully kind of getting at that pedagogy and using art and performance in an educational and direct way. A number of workshops and PMAs, and then I'm interested in what the closing plenaries will look like and how kind of how the rhetoric and the action we call for day one might change or be magnified by the time we end. So, like, you know, the opening plenary was pretty powerful, a number of, like, really great speeches and really good context, but how we kind of, I want to leave with a beckoning call to do even more.
A lot of the actions are taking place not so much in the overall plenary, but in these things that you're participating in right now, these PMAs, of which there's probably 20 of them, where they're gatherings of smaller number of people, but really do drill down in analyzing, as you previously mentioned, analyzing the problem and then really developing time and some brain power into coming up with an action plan that can be taken back to respective communities. And hopefully kind of overseeing all of that is maybe a national strategy for that particular area or subject matter or theme of PMA, of which, again, there's about 20 of them.
Yeah, it's the understanding that you can kind of get a vision, a rough vision in a PMA, but the work has to be done back at the community. So yeah. It's like a PMA is an everyday process. You know, a really good action plan, a really good campaign plan. Like we talked about, I forget the speaker that said that. Was it Immortal Technique? He said that, you know, we got our 6-month campaign plan, or not even that. A lot of times, if you coming from Cleveland and a lot of organizing I've seen around the country, it's not even a couple weeks. It's like, you know, you plan an action and then you plan another action based on how they react. And there's no real chess game at bay. But Immortal Technique was talking about the 50-year master plan that governments have, that the nonprofit industrial complex has, you know, real strategic vision. And the PMA is the inception of that. Beyond that, it's the day-to-day grind and day-to-day work where you're, you know, making something that's flexible and constantly working towards that vision.
Yeah, activists, Gavin, just to pick up on that, activists oftentimes plan these actions that are horizontal, that are just one right next to each other. They don't build anything. They're not like a staircase that one action builds on top of another and leads to another that's sequential
crescendo.
Yeah. They're just sort of unconnected to the other, and they don't add up. They don't increase like a staircase does. It just stays on the same horizontal level. And so they're unto themselves separate actions that have a beginning, a distinct beginning, a distinct end, and that's it.
Yeah, and talking to sustainability, one thing I've really been learning in the last year or so is that you have to have leadership development and programming along the way because, you know, if it's all just when a lot of groups just get tethered to marches and direct action, but they don't have any kind of, it's not sustainable because you don't have people that can continue the fight into the future. So if someone moves, if someone dies, if someone gets burnt out in the struggle, you don't have young and old to continue to plug in those skills that you may not have had. And a lot of times, you know, what I'm trying to see here how groups really not only delegate tasks, but find a mission and a purpose for everyone in the organization. So I'm learning that, like, you know, the way we have to try to do our programs, do our actions, is just take everything, every task you may seem filled, and make it as small as you can. So the more you can have people do, the better, because they'll feel one with the movement. And, you know, it's a matter of kind of, there's relationships kind of layered on top of that. So you have to know what people want to do. Not everyone's interested in the strategy and the vision. That's okay.
Yeah.
You know, some people only have the time and only have the energy and only maybe have the skill to pass out flyers or to sit at a table. But that's critical to your movement as well. And we can't just, too often it's like five people guiding everything. And that, it's not fair to you, it's not fair to the world, and it's definitely not fair to the people that want to be involved and the people that you're, you know, I don't like using the term advocate. I like organizer, because advocates speak for people.
Right.
And oftentimes when you're in advocacy, you always speak for people. There is not that development along the way. Organizing or movement building, I even like that more. And that movement building really kind of brings people along the way as well. So another kind of frame I've had is we got to look at things as not as event organizers, like you said, it's horizontal. You know, we plan this event, but movement builders, you know, you're not an event organizer, because an event is just an event. It's right. Kind of stuck in time. The movement moves. It builds and it continues to grow. But a lot of times we put in all these resources and all this time and all this energy into very good events. So we've done this with our Poetry Slams, but then there's not even a consideration of like follow-up calls. You know, that's not even put into the plan.
It's so hard, because these things we don't learn, you know, in our culture and the likes. We've got to learn them as we go along, and the whole notion of leadership is sort of inborn. That's not true. That's developed. And these kind of skills we have to pick up as we're involved in these campaigns and these efforts and these movements. And, you know, we don't have the luxury of having unlimited resources to where we can go off at months at a time and go through these institutes and be, you know, interns and others who kind of in a stepping stone be mentored by others for a year or two before we go out there. We're thrown right into the mix of it. And you make mistakes along the way. That's just how it goes. But we do the best we can. And being committed to being strategic is what is so important. Thinking and acting strategically. Because what we're up against are forces. They don't just via happenstance do things. They are thinking. They're deliberate. That's right. They've got these multi-year plans.
They're really well educated.
Yeah, really well educated and really thinking through what needs to happen. So we got to be the same.
Yeah, and I was thinking back to the pedagogy piece and kind of Erica Chenoweth is a professor at Colorado Boulder, I believe, but she's kind of studied nonviolence empirically. And when she has a TED Talk where she mentions that, you know, if we had half the teaching on people like Gandhi and King and Fred Ross and Cesar Chavez that have built these movements, if we had half of that in our education, especially to youth, as we did, you know, Hitler and Stalin and these kind of, and Eisenhower and Patton and Custer, half of the education there, it would give us an understanding of how we actually do these things.
So,
matching that pedagogy.
Yeah. Or Gene Sharp. I don't know if you've ever heard of Gene Sharp.
Gene Sharp, absolutely.
Just a historian of nonviolence and nonviolent social movements and actions and learnings of successes and failures. I mean, this guy has really broken it down. Even though he's a historian, he has been in part kind of a sociologist to kind of decouple and deconstruct and analyze, synthesize, crystallize what has worked and what hasn't from basically Greek and Roman times up to the present time. So we need to learn that stuff.
Yeah. A lot of people think that nonviolence is hokey. You know, they think that it's like this just, it's soft and it's weak. If you look at it, it's a science. It's a very disciplined method that can be just as, you know, is more powerful, but can be just as much of a punch as a gun or a sword. I was writing last night, actually. So another thing that I, you know, another reason I came, kind of going back to the initial thing, is a city, a different city, it gives a flavor and an environment and a taste to you that I wouldn't have in Cleveland. So sitting here, I was just outside the church, kind of thinking about how there's a church in the middle of, you know, I'm listening to these people fight. I'm seeing people play fighting and, you know, people drinking outside, and you're in the middle of this sea of poverty and oppression and just people. People, you know, out on the street, probably maybe because they can't drink inside or because they can't, they don't feel comfortable inside. But whereas you have this church and you have activists in the church not letting people, you know, you have churches in the midst of all of this terror and destruction, not letting people in, and kind of understanding what my role is in that by, because I'm in the middle of, you know, and I'm thinking this as a writer, I'm in the middle of kind of a door that is, you know, a shelter, and then this kind of fence, which is like the kind of thinking of it in a prison context, is like the church is almost keeping people out. And how do we kind of go out and talk to those? Well, just understand and talk to those folks and let them into what we do as well.
Well, I just don't want to hold you up to get back to the PMA. Just wanted to thank you for taking the time, and also to acknowledge that Derek is also a member of the AFSC Economic and Political Justice Campaign. So thanks so much, Derek.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, that's all for this week. Just to conclude, one of the main themes that has come up at the U.S. Social Forum, or slogan, I guess, that I think encapsulates the participatory nature of what this whole event seeks is nothing about us without us. That's all for this week. Keep up with our activities. Contact us with questions, concerns, or willingness to help out. Our website is afsc.org/Akron. Facebook page is facebook.com/NEOAFSC. Our program blog is northeastohioafsc.wordpress.com. My blog is createrealdemocracy.wordpress.com. Until next week, onward for justice, peace, and democracy.